intention. As many of you are aware that the whole of India was rocked by various protests over corruption and various other issues in the last few months, and an unprecedented wave of protests was seen being launched by the youth and others across the length and breadth of the country, culminating in major changes in Delhi. And what implications there are for the youth of this country and how each individual can make a difference. So His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj is going to be speaking on the spiritual perspectives to this issue. And His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj left his home at a very young age, in his teens, traveling across the world, came to India searching for the truth, met a variety of spiritual masters and teachers, and the details of this is there in his memoir, The Journey Home. And incidentally, the last few months he has been traveling widely all across America, meeting different corporates, heads of state, including President Obama, and you know, many of these very respected personalities in America have been extremely impressed with his determination and the amazing way in which the story has been narrated. So then, after meeting Srila Prabhupada here at Cross Maidan, he dedicated his life for the mission of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and then he went to New Vrindavan, was preaching in the colleges. First he was a pujari, taking care of the cows also, and then he was traveling all college campuses, and then he came to Mumbai in 1986-87 and then established this community, which turned out to be one of the most amazing, inspiring examples of Varnashram in action. And devotees all over ISKCON have been extremely inspired and impressed with his efforts. And in fact, so many of the projects like Bhaktivedanta Hospital, Gopal Garden, and many other projects connected to this temple, apart from the counselor system and the youth preaching programs, they have been glorified by devotees and others all across the world. And we are extremely fortunate that His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj has, amongst various offers and choices to spend time in different parts of the world, has preferred to spend time in Chowpatty, Mumbai, for more than 6 to 8 months of the year for the last 25 years. So it has been nothing but His causeless mercy upon all of us, and we are very happy that he's here again this evening in spite of his health not being so good. And this is incidentally the 99th Prerna Festival, a series which began way back in July 2002, and this is 2011. And we are very happy to see that the festival, which began with 150 students and youth in 2002, is now consistently attracting more than 700, 800, and today it will be more than, you know, 1100, 1200 youth. And we are also happy to announce that the next Prerna, which will be the 100th Prerna, will be in December. But then we are going to be celebrating in a grand way in January. And that is going to be on a bigger scale, and the whole format of that festival will be something unique, and there will be a separate organizing committee which will be organizing that Prerna, and probably even the name of that particular festival will be something different because of the particular details of the events which will be happening in that program. But that program will be coordinated by Radhika Pati Prabhu and his team, who regularly organize the very famous and successful Dadar Rath Yatra. So we would request all of you to start preparing yourselves to get more of your friends and well-wishers for the 21st of January for the Mega Youth Festival. And the speaker for that festival will also be His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So please do stay tuned in to all the youth preachers whom you are connected to. For more details of services related to that particular youth event, we are expecting a crowd of somewhere between 20 to 25,000 youth in that festival on January the 21st. And even all the IYF devotees from Pune are cordially invited for that. So now let us hear His Holiness Radhanath Swami speak on this topic, the power of intention.
Gauranga Prabhu, please empower me with your intention. The intention of the baby is to get the attention of the mother, and the intention of the mother is to make the baby happy, and in taking the baby out of the temple room, she has made everyone happy. I'm very grateful to all of you for being with us this evening. And to our special guests, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great honor and sincere good fortune to have the opportunity to speak to you on this very relevant topic. The power of intention. In these days, I think almost everyone is intention. But the only way that individually and collectively we can come out of this tension that we are in is to understand how to develop good intentions and to apply them to our lives. An intention is the purpose or the attitude that is behind our actions and our words. The history of the world very much tells us the power of individual intentions and how they have affected human civilization. William Blake, he has written, "A truth told with bad intention can beat," in other words, can be more destructive than all the lies that we can invent. It's not just what we do and what we say, but our intention that can empower us, either positively or negatively, in our own karma and how it affects people, the environment, the world. We all hear the saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Because most everybody, they really feel that they have good intentions. But the nature of the ahankar, or the false ego, that is misguided, can pollute our awareness, our consciousness, in such a way to justify evil in the name of goodness. One of my friends from Germany, he told me a story that was told to him by his father. It was a story about the person who Adolf Hitler appointed as the leader of the SS. He was in charge of exterminating entire races and religions of people. That was their goal. And according to history books, they successfully murdered about 6 million people, innocent civilians. One day, he was being massaged, and he was telling his masseur that he was a vegetarian. And the reason he was a vegetarian is because he very strongly believed in the principle of ahimsa. And he went on and on explaining the philosophical meaning of ahimsa and the glories of ahimsa. Afterward, the person massaging him asked, if you really believe in ahimsa, nonviolence, then why are you ordering the massacre and the murder of so many millions of people of these minority races? And Himmler paused for some time and then spoke very gravely. He said, it is unfortunate, but we have to do this for the good of humanity and for the future of the world. So it appears that he really believed he had good intention of serving humanity. But those intentions were clouded, polluted, and corrupted by the false ego. Terrorists today, many of them, we can assume, their intention really is to serve God and to please God through the process of murdering people that they feel are like pollution within this world. So they think their intentions are good. The way human beings think is very relative to our egoistic conceptions. Yes, the road to hell is very much paved by people who believe they have good intentions. What is very crucial to the world in the past, in the present, and in the future, is for people to develop a foundation of knowledge based on universal spiritual truths and values, and to build our intentions on that foundation. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there is a beautiful invocation by Srila Rupa Goswami where he tells that bhakti, or true love, devotion, is based on the intention of pleasing Krishna in a favorable way. Pleasing the Supreme Lord And it should not be mixed with selfishness, karma, with desire for liberation, with desire for mystic powers. It should be simply for the pleasure of the Lord. And there's nothing that pleases the Lord more than being an instrument of his compassion for the world. Srila Prabhupada, he quotes Lord Chaitanya that bhakti is like a seed, bhakti lata bija. This seed is, according to Rupa Goswami, that intention to serve and please the Lord in a favorable way without egoism or selfishness. But along with that seed, which is so rare and so precious, there is a beautiful verse that a person or a spirit soul, through birth after birth after birth living within this universe, comes in contact with a guru. And that guru plants the seed of devotion within the heart. That seed of our good and holy intentions needs to be cultivated and watered through satsang, association with holy people who give us proper conceptions, knowledge, through sadhana, which is the water that nourishes that seed of devotion, and through seva, dynamic action based on that intention. But for all of us, along with the seed of devotion will come many weeds. Any of you who has done gardening, you know how important it is to tend to the weeds. We may have a good intention in life, but due to the conditioning of the mind, so much negativity comes. Like weeds. But what thoughts we choose to pursue is what is going to determine whether we water the weed or whether we water the real seed of bhakti or of love. Whatever good intentions we have are going to be regularly challenged and assaulted. And the tendency is to be distracted by these weeds. And once we begin this cycle of making the wrong choices to give attention to the weeds, to the unholy or negative thoughts, desires that come to our mind, we become more and more bound and habituated to them. We often use the example that no child, by its own nature, likes to smoke cigarettes. But due to some association of people around, we think it's cool, it's fashionable, it'll make me more popular, it'll make me look sexy, it'll make me look tough, whatever it is. Then people choose to water that weed. But as you water it, the weed becomes stronger and stronger. And the bigger the weed comes, the more it demands water in the form of our attention and the choices we make. So every time we make a choice, we become habituated to that choice. Little children who've never smoked a cigarette, it's not a problem for them to not smoke. But someone who has watered that weed for 30 years, that habit is howling, howling like a passionate wolf within our heart, within our senses, in our mind. I need more, more, and more. So every time we give in to lust or greed, envy, anger, arrogance, or illusion, those weeds become stronger, hungrier, and it's more and more difficult not to surrender to those thoughts. Krishna tells in the beginning the nature of kama, or selfish passion, or lust. Kama esha krodha esha. Krishna says it's the most deadly enemy in all creation. It can degrade the soul. It can destroy our lives. So Krishna says from the very beginning, do not give in to this kama. Now, we've already been doing it for so many lives. So how can we go right back to the beginning? It's too late from that perspective. But what Krishna is saying from the very beginning means from today. It's not too late. But if we don't do it today, we'll probably never do it. Because our decisions have to be made now. From the very beginning, when you hear this message of Bhagavad Gita, we should curb this sinful symbol of sin, Krishna calls it. The weed within our heart. Because if we don't, it becomes stronger, hungrier, and we become more and more habituated to make choices according to the dictations of these negative, unhealthy thoughts and desires. And gradually our intentions become, right down to the roots, very, very corrupted. And we can actually even think that the weed is the seed, is the real plant that is going to make me happy in life. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wrote about Lord Chaitanya that he had come to give essentially three principles: jnana, vairagya, and bhakti. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. Jnana means the ability to discriminate to what's actually for our well-being and what is not. What is truth? What is illusion? It's very important that we have this knowledge. Srila Prabhupada gives an example of a mother who loved her child, but her love was not based on what's really for the welfare of her child. So the little boy got typhoid fever. And this particular type of typhoid, if he ate anything heavy, he could get really sick and die. I remember I had that same type of typhoid in 1971. And I was put in a charitable hospital. My My doctor's name was Krishna Gopal. And he told me for 2 weeks I couldn't eat anything. And all they gave me was glucose water. No medicines, just glucose water. Because I guess in a charitable hospital, glucose water is cheaper than medicine. And it's definitely cheaper than food. But interestingly, I was really hungry. I wanted to eat. And I saw other patients around me, and they were eating nicely. Because I was in a ward with about 15 other people with diseases in the same room. And they were eating. And I sometimes asked, you know, I'm hungry. And they said, no, you will die, only glucose water. In relation to the story, all I could say is it's lucky my mother wasn't there. Because this child who had typhoid was crying to its mother, I want parathas. And the mother said, no, doctor said you can't eat. The child said, no, I want parathas, I want parathas. So out of love for her child, with the intention to make him happy, she gave him parathas, and he died. So her intentions were good, but her power to discriminate was not. Because good intentions are meant for the right result. So jnana is very important. To understand, who am I? Am I this material body? Am I the soul? The atma. What are the needs of the atma, the soul? What are the activities? What are the words? What are the thoughts that liberate the soul, and what are the activities, words, and thoughts that escalate the bondage and the suffering within this world? This is jnana. To understand who I am, what real happiness is, and what is to be done and what is not to be done. Krishna tells in the Gita, when we're under the influence of the ego and illusion, then what is religion is considered to be irreligion, and what is irreligion is considered to be religion. So really, what is the intentions that we should cultivate for our true well-being? And what are the different distractions that are inevitably going to haunt us? And how to overcome them? That is jnana. And what is vairagya? Detachment. Rupa Goswami explains to accept what is favorable for devotional service and to reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. To not give in to the weeds of the restless thoughts of our mind that are trying to distract us and divert us from our real purpose. But even after knowing this, we need the strength to actually do it. Bhagavad Gita begins with Duryodhana and his people, the Kurus on one side, and Arjuna, Yudhisthira Maharaj on the other. Arjuna represents devotion, compassion, love. And Duryodhana represents envy, greed, arrogance, lust, anger, illusion. He embodied all of these qualities. He was willing to do anything and everything to fulfill the screaming hunger of the weeds in his heart. And he was not only habituated, but in that habituated state, he could
actually justify that what he was doing was the right thing, the best thing, and it was real goodness. That is how the mind could mislead us if we allow it to. Krishna tells us in the Gita, when the mind is uncontrolled, it becomes our greatest enemy. And when the mind is controlled, it's our best friend. Like the story of the two dogs, the divine and the demoniac nature. If we feed the bad dog of our lust and greed and other things like that, they become stronger and stronger and stronger and control our life and empower us to justify anything as good intentions. So Arjuna was a devotee, and he had really good intentions. He wanted to please Krishna. He wanted to do real good for the world without selfishness or ego. But still, even Arjuna was put in a very, very confused state. He didn't know what would be done or what should not be done. Or in very simple language that Prabhupada explained in a previous analogy, he didn't know whether to give the child paradas or not. Should I fight this war or should I go away? He was Krishna's friend. He was a great learned scholar. He was the most noble soldier. But even Arjuna, by the nature of this world, was entangled in this crossroads of what is right and what is wrong. What to speak of the rest of us? If Arjuna could not figure out the right action, what is our position? Ultimately, he set the example by turning to his guru, to Krishna. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Krishna tells in the Gita, if you want to know the truth, you approach the guru, inquire submissively, and then render service, which means actually execute what you hear. And Arjuna understood perfectly at the end of the Bhagavad Gita what was to be done and what was not to be done. He learned how this material world is operated, the power of destructive time, the nature of karma, the nature of the mind, the nature of the soul, and ultimately how to rise above all these destructive tendencies by surrendering to the will of the Lord. And then he showed his example by putting it to practice, by fighting against the distractions to truth, to goodness, and to bhakti. Dhruva, he's one of the greatest examples of saintly people, Mahajans. He actually saw God, Narayan, face to face when he was only about 5 years old. He was a saintly king, a self-realized soul. But even Dhruva, who had the best of intentions, we read about he was fighting against the dynasty of Yakshas, who had, one of them had killed Dhruva's brother. This world, there are three modes of nature: sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And these three modes of nature are always working, and they can affect us. To fight, one becomes influenced by the mode of passion. And Dhruva was, he had all the right intentions to rule the world for the ultimate good and the pleasure of the Lord. But he got so much in the passion of fighting, he just kept fighting and fighting, destroying. And ultimately, Kuvera came down and begged him, "You already killed the person who did the misdeed. You're going to extinguish the whole race of his people. There's no need to do any of this anymore. You've done the job. Now please stop." Dhruva understood what he's saying is true. And he stopped. And he made friends with the Yakshas. So even great souls, by the nature of this world, sometimes we get entangled in what we're doing. And we need the association of saintly people to keep us centered and focused on the right thing. We have Bharat Maharaj as an example. He was the son of Rishabhdev, who was an incarnation of Narayan. If we read the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, some of the greatest teachings ever given to this world are the lessons that Rishabhdev, the avatar, gave to his sons. And the eldest of his sons, who he chose to be the next king, was Bharat. India was named after him, Bharatvarsha. In fact, the world at one time was called Bharatvarsha. He was influenced by the mode of goodness. He had the intention of serving the Lord, surrendering to the Lord, and perfecting his life in prema bhakti. He was so detached, he gave up his whole kingdom, went to the Himalayas, and performed meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he saw that little baby deer drowning in the Gandaki River. And out of influence by the mode of goodness, he took the deer out of the water. But even goodness can be a distraction if we're not careful. He nursed the deer to health, which is all good things. But the problem is, he got so caught up in the physical care of this deer that he neglected his own spiritual practice. And ultimately, with all good intentions, he was infatuated by his affection for a deer. And he died and took his next birth as a deer. It's a good lesson. Now, if Bharat had association like Dhruva did, someone would have said, "Bharat, it's nice you've taken care of the deer, but do your sadhana, do your spiritual practice. Don't be materially attached." If he just had that association, he could have saved himself so much trouble. Even goodness could be a distraction if it takes our focus away from our true intention and purpose. But because he had the right intention, even though he was diverted and distracted and took his next birth as a deer, ultimately Krishna sees our intentions. Srila Prabhupada writes that the Lord accepts not everything that we offer, but the purpose, the intention in which it is offered. The intention is the desire the attitude of our heart. And Krishna is within the heart, seeing our purpose, seeing our attitude, and seeing how sincere we actually are. So even though Bharat made a serious mistake, because he had the right intentions, he wasn't doing anything out of envy or greed. He wasn't selfish. He fell into a mundane form of compassion, which diverted him from the whole purpose of why he went there, to attain enlightenment. So Krishna gave him, as a deer, the full awareness of his mistake. And that little deer would just quietly go wherever there were sadhus doing satsang and speaking from the scriptures and performing kirtan. And he just quietly listened and listened and spent his whole life as a deer cultivating bhakti. And the next life became Jad Bharat. And in that life, he became one of the greatest saints. He became the guru of a king. So yes, if we have the right intention, guided by gurus and sadhus and scriptures, even if we make mistakes, if they're not out of envy, even if we make mistakes, Krishna will be there to help us to rectify them, because Krishna sees our intentions. Those foundational intentions. When Srila Prabhupada explains, well, in this story, it illustrates how important it is that we recognize the power of the mind to distract us, and how important satsang or association really is to keep us on track. Again, Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna does not accept everything that's offered, but accepts the intention in which it is offered. In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, there was Damayanti. She was the sister of Raghava Pandit. And every year, they would cook hundreds of preparations for Lord Chaitanya. And they would pack them in bags. They lived in Panihati, which is on the bank of the river Ganga in Bengal. And they would have two or three people, actually a little procession, who took charge of carrying all those bags to Lord Chaitanya in Puri. It took several weeks to get there. And Lord Chaitanya, he would eat a little bit of each preparation for the whole year. So how is it that this Bengali prasad would last a whole year? And it wasn't just like what kakras, for these things that don't spoil, or chipped rice, poa. There were sabjis and chutneys and different rice preparations. And they stayed completely fresh all year round. Because the Lord, he was tasting their intention. And based on their intention to please him, and all the love they put into that cooking, that love was a transcendental natural preservative that even 8 months later when he ate it, it was as if it was cooked that day. And some of the preparations were very rich with ghee and with various milk products and paneer. And Lord Chaitanya, I guess in Bengal sometimes they use mustard oils. Very heavy digestion. And she planned these bags so carefully that she knew which bag he would eat and which preparation he would take next. So she made this one preparation right after a big feast of rich foods that was specifically for digestion. And usually things that are good for digestion taste quite miserable. So it was ginger and some black pepper and all of these things like this. It was just a digestive aid food, which was meant to reduce acidity and like that. And when Lord Chaitanya was eating it, it tasted like nectar to him. Because he's not just tasting the sugar and the vegetables and the ghee, he's tasting the purpose, the love in which it's offered. And this love was so intimate and sweet that she was so concerned with his health. It was so personal. It was so motherly. That's what he tasted. And therefore it was like nectar. A graphic example is in the Leela of Sri Ram. Jatayu. He was a bird, a vulture. When he saw Sita being carried away by Ravana and there was no one else around, it was just the three of them in a secluded forest. Jatayu could not tolerate seeing this. Sita told him, just tell Ram, as they were flying overhead with Ravana. She saw Jatayu down there. She said, you are old. Don't try to fight Ravana. Just tell Ram which direction I'm going and how I have been taken. But Jatayu could not sit there and allow this injustice to happen. Even though he knew he would die, he would rather die doing the right thing than live and watching injustices happen. So he challenged Ravana. He attacked him in his ripe old age. And they fought and fought for hours. And ultimately Ravana, with his sword, cut off Jatayu's wings, cut off his legs. He was defeated. He was laying there. And when Ram eventually came hours later looking for Sita, he saw Jatayu a bloody mess on the verge of death. And Ram put Jatayu's head in his lap. And when he heard from Jatayu what had happened, Ram said, on this very day, I will send you to Vaikuntha. I will give you the highest liberation to be my eternal associate in the spiritual world. And chanting the name of Ram, Jatayu died in Ram's lap. It's not about being a success or failure in our endeavors. From an external perspective, the Lord did not see that Jatayu failed. He did not see that he lost. because his intentions were with pure love to please the Lord. From Ram's perspective, Jatayu, he may have lost a battle, but he ultimately won the war. He was given the perfection of liberation. Ravana, he won the battle, but because he had the wrong intentions, he lost the war miserably. And when Jatayu passed away, Ram cried incessant tears, crying out that I have lost my best friend. Even the loss of my father Dasarath and the abduction of Sita does not hurt my heart as the loss of a friend like Jatayu, who was willing to give his life to serve me and to serve Sita, who I love so dearly. The power of intention. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was in Sri Rangam, and there were many great pundits who were citing Sanskrit scriptures with perfect pronunciation. And there was that simple Brahmin who was quite illiterate. And he would sit and chant the 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita every single day. But because he couldn't pronounce any of the words properly, and it took him so long, the different scholars considered him quite useless. Sometimes they laughed at him, sometimes they criticized him. But the very speaker of the Gita, Krishna, who appeared as Lord Chaitanya, when he saw him, he went right to this Brahmin and spoke to him. He said, "What is it you're doing?" Because the Lord sees his intention. He said, "My guru has ordered me to read the entire Bhagavad Gita in this spot every day. I'm illiterate. Sometimes I say it right, sometimes I say it wrong. I don't even know the difference. But I'm trying to please my Gurudev." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, seeing that intention in him from within his heart, was very pleased. He said, "If you don't understand so well, then why, when you're reading, do you look like you're in ecstasy? You're crying tears, your hairs are standing on end." And he said, "Because as I'm reading, I may not understand the words technically, but the whole time I'm seeing the beautiful form of Krishna within my heart, speaking these ambrosial words to Arjuna. Krishna's taking the role of the servant charioteer of Arjuna and instructing him in the message of the Gita, the love and the beauty of Krishna. The love of Krishna for his devotee, that brings tears to my eyes." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood. Because his intention was to serve and please his guru, even though he was being criticized and laughed at, Krishna was revealing the very essence of the Gita to him. Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, "You are the true knower of the Bhagavad Gita." And with his embrace, he gave that Brahmin the ultimate perfection of prema bhakti, the highest liberation. So from a material perspective, he was a failure as a scholar. But because his intention was pure, he attained the fruit of the study of all the scriptures. Vedaischa sarveraham eva vidya. Krishna says, by all the Vedas, I'm to be known. Rupa Goswami tells the story of that one devotee living on the bank of the Narmada River in South India. And he had no money, he had nothing. But he had an intention. He wanted to cook a feast for the pleasure of the Lord. He wanted to cook a wonderful feast to give the Lord pleasure. But how do you cook a feast when you have nothing? He sat on the bank of the river and closed his eyes and in meditation. He went out and purchased all kinds of sabjis, and he made a beautiful little kitchen. And he started cooking the sabjis and cooking rice and cooking chutneys, and then he was making kheer, white rice with milk and sweetener. And step by step, he made the fire, he cooked it, he stirred it. He put it in the river to get cool because he wanted to serve it very cold for Krishna's satisfaction. And to test to see if it was cold enough, he put his finger in it, and his finger was burnt because it was still hot. This is all in a meditation. And it hurt so much that he came out of his meditation and looked at his finger, and it was actually burnt. And in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan started to laugh. And Lakshmi Devi asked, why are you laughing? He said, look down there and see that Brahman. He burnt his finger in his meditation. And the Lord came down and brought him to Vaikuntha, the ultimate perfection of life. So from a material perspective, he really had nothing to offer. But because his intention was to serve and to please Krishna, Krishna saw that intention and gave him life's perfection. And our own beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, by his example, he taught the power of intention. He was here in Bombay. He left Vrindavan with the desire, with the intention to be an instrument of Krishna's compassion, to spread the message of Bhagavad Gita and Lord Chaitanya all over the world. That was his intention, but he had nothing. He had some boxes of books that he spent about 6 years writing, editing, getting published, taking loans, not from banks. He convinced the publisher to publish it and wait till he sold it for any payment. Because he had nothing. And he came to Bombay to try to get passage to America. And at Juhu, Sumati Muraji was living, and he approached her. She was a great Vaishnavi of the Pushti Marg, the line of Sripad Ballabhacharya. And he knew that she loved Krishna. And he said, I want to spread the message of the Gita and devotion to Krishna all over the world. And you are the owner of a cargo ship line, give me passage on one of your boats. He was just going on 70 years old. She told him, I can't do this to you. It's cold. No one will listen to you. You will die. He begged. He sat on her steps saying, I won't move till I get a ticket. A great saint from Vrindavan. He was doing nothing for himself. And on the cargo ship, Jaladuta, 38 days, heart attacks, seasickness, so many trials and difficulties. And after passing through all that, when finally he arrived in the Boston Harbor area, he wrote prayers to Krishna, which revealed his intention. He didn't know if he would be success or failure by material standards. In one sense, he was like Jatayu. In the service of Ram, Jatayu, he was so old. He was sickly. How could he fight this fight against Ravana? Srila Prabhupada was single-handedly raging war against the whole material energy at such an old age, after heart attacks. No money, no people. But he was willing to fight for Krishna. And in his beautiful prayers, I have no power to give your message, Krishna, to these people. Only if you give me the words will they understand. My Gurudev, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has given me an impossible instruction. Only if you empower me can I reach these people's hearts. I am your puppet. Just make me dance the way you want me to dance. That was his intention. Nothing for himself. He didn't want liberation. He didn't want mystic powers. If he wanted any of those things, he would have just stayed in Vrindavan. He just wanted to show compassion and love to the world by giving them Krishna Bhakti. He wrote in his prayers that the people of this world are suffering so bad due to the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance. But by your power, let me be an instrument to make them happy. And like Jatayu, he fought. And he told us that sometimes he was thinking it wasn't possible. But still, like that Brahmin in South India, to serve his guru and please his guru, he was just going to try. And what was the power of his intention? That's all he had, was his intention. His faith in the holy name, his faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and his intention to give it to the world. Within a few years, hundreds and thousands of people coming. Over 100 beautiful temples, hundreds of millions of books that he wrote, published, and distributed. He established ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When he was living in a little storefront, 26 Second Avenue, and he really didn't have any followers, he just had a few well-wishers, who didn't have any money, he established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the people were asking those well-wishers, what is international about this? There's only a few of us in the Lower East Side of New York in a little storefront. the place was such a run-down neighborhood, the rent of that storefront was $125 a month. Even in those days, that was nothing. And he didn't have the money to pay. And after the first month, they didn't know if they would get enough for the next month. And he was telling them, this is in an international society. This was his intention. And on the basis of that intention, what is the power? It is an international society. Just here in Bombay, Mumbai, there's a beautiful temple in Juhu Beach with hundreds and thousands, millions of people going. There's another temple in Mira Road. There's another temple being built in Vashi area. And we have over 1,000 students sitting here today in our little temple in Chopati, Mumbai. In Vrindavan, millions of people go to Krishna Balaram temple. In Mayapur Dham, in Delhi, there's about over 400 temples all over the world. Just born of the power of intention. The intention to please and serve the Lord. In the 70s, Srila Prabhupada, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, the book publishing division of his movement, working extremely hard over time, they were able to publish, I believe, one book every 2 or 3 months at the maximum. Srila Prabhupada told him, I want 17 volumes done in 2 months. And the head of the trust, he said, Prabhupada, that is impossible. Srila Prabhupada's reply was, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. There was no other arguments after that. Half the department was in New York. Actually, more than half were in New York. Some were in Los Angeles. They had to do illustrations. They had to do the Sanskrit editing. They had to do the editing. They had to do the proofing and the everything. All they had to do the transcriptions. All they had was tapes of Srila Prabhupada speaking. 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And they worked First, they had to bring everybody from New York. Most of them were householders, husbands and wives. And they all had to come to L.A., Los Angeles, and they had to get accommodations. And they had to set up studios. And they didn't have much money. And this was all within the 2 months. They were working 24-hour-a-day shifts. And ultimately, they finished all 17 volumes, the illustrations, the printing, the publishing, and they were brought to Prabhupada in India just before the deadline. How was it possible? It was not possible. But their intention was to please their guru. Srila Prabhupada did the impossible with the intention to please his guru. And then he wanted to give his disciples the taste of the same thing, to do the impossible to please their guru. You see, when we really want to be instruments of Krishna's grace within this world, when we do not have greed, when we do not have selfish passion, when we really want to please Krishna, and we have the proper guidance on how to do it, that intention can attract a power infinitely greater than any of ours. Krishna can create universes within moments. And Krishna, who is within the heart of all of us, can empower us to overcome all obstacles, individually, personally, and socially, if we just have the right intention. That is what is all important. There is nothing more powerful than the sincere intention to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, and to please the great spiritual masters. Today in this world, we've been so distracted, so disconnected from the true needs of our hearts. Gauranga Prabhu was just discussing in his introduction the corruptions going on. The world is everywhere. We see so much idealistic revolutions happening. In the Middle East, there's revolutions against corruption of leaders. There's been the tearing down of tyrants in Wall Street, which is to a large extent over the years like the heart of the world's finances. Due to excessive greed and arrogance, people misuse their positions to cause so much pain, ultimately to themselves and to so many others. And the people are becoming sick of this greed. There's all kinds of demonstrations, and the police are trying to deal with it. And it's growing. It's growing, not only New York City, but the demonstrations are going all over, starting to spread all over America. And here in India, due to unfortunate corruption, influential people are fasting, demonstrating. Srila Prabhupada explained that lust, selfish passion, and greed are the greatest enemies to ourselves and to the society, and the greatest reasons for spiritual downfall. The subtle forms of lust are the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. And even in a spiritual society, when we put ourself in the center rather than Krishna or God in the center, then even trying to get more and more followers, disciples, more and more properties, and build more and more temples, that could be a form of greed. We want more and more and more. But if we're motivated by profit, adoration, or distinction for ourselves, our service could be the cause of our fall down. We have to carefully check what is our intentions. We have to distinguish between the real plant or seed of devotion and the weeds that are inevitably going to be growing around it. In order to keep ourselves on the straight path, sadhu sangam is crucial. Association with holy people. Because that association gives a clear understanding of what intention we should focus on and how to nourish it. Satsang gives us knowledge and protects us from distraction. And we water the true seed of the real intention of prema bhakti through our sadhana, our spiritual practice, and through our seva, or practically dedicating our thoughts, our words, and our action to those intentions. Srila Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to experience the higher taste of love for Krishna, love for God, and compassion to others as the real wealth, what gives real, true fulfillment to the heart. And to create a society of people that could inspire and protect individually and collectively from the distractions of the weeds and the bad dogs that are within us and without us and outside of us. There is no greater power in all of the universe than a simple and humble devotee's intention to please God, to please Krishna. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, for that brilliant talk, and it was so inspiring for all of us. And I'm sure there may be some questions on this, but before we begin the questions and answers, I would just like to welcome several special guests who are here this evening. We have with us Mr. Mahim Swami, along for those who have any questions, please raise your hands and the mic will follow.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, many times we have discussions with outsiders about God and philosophy, and I always use a word like my guru says this, according to my guru this is right, according to my guru this is wrong. And this is to be done according to my guru, this is not to be done. And towards the end, normally they are very impressed with our philosophy. And they ask me, who is your guru? I join my hands and I say, it's Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So my question is, Maharaj, is this right to say that you are my guru? And is there a possibility to be in a relationship of a student and a guru eternally without any authorized process like Diksha. Just through heart, I believe Maharaj is my guru, I offer you prayers, I try to follow your principles. Is there a possibility to be in a relationship with as a student and guru eternally, Maharaj? Thank you.
Gauranga Prabhu could answer your question. I'm just trying to serve. Srila Prabhupada is given his life, his soul, his everything to bring the world to Krishna. And in my own heart, anyone who comes to this wonderful mission of Lord Chaitanya is a very precious and dear servant of Srila Prabhupada, and I'm trying to assist them and serve them. If you want me to be your friend, your servant, your guide, your guru, whatever way I could best serve you, I'm honored and happy to serve you. Essentially, the real relationship between a guru and disciple is of the heart. To accept the guru's instructions as one's life and soul, and to apply those instructions into our life. The primary instruction Prabhupada gave all of us is in order to really water that seed of bhakti, of spiritual intention to love and please Krishna. We water it by chanting the holy names, by hearing about Krishna, by associating with devotees of Krishna, by chanting the names of Krishna, by doing seva. But this chanting is the most powerful method of cleaning the heart of lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion. So one who takes this message with the proper intention, that is the real and deep connection between guru and disciple. The process of diksha or initiation is sacred and holy. It has been given as a direction from the scriptures and from the great acharyas throughout the ages to formalize and empower that relationship. But diksha without the proper intent, without that taking shelter and surrender of heart, is quite meaningless. It is a formalization and empowerment that, if done with the proper intention, gives us greater strength and gives us greater blessings to carry out the will of the heart. That answer your question? And it also helps us because it impels us to make commitment. Sometimes in a sentimental way, we want to have a guru on our terms without commitment. Which is good. But to actually
have the power, the blessings, and the grace to overcome the obstacles of this world, commitment is required. As a student, in order to get your degree, you have to commit yourself to your studies. If you don't commit yourself to your studies, you'll just watch television all day, or go to Bollywood cinemas, or cricket matches, or whatever else. But that commitment, you focus. If I want my degree, I have to actually study. If you're going to be a doctor, you have to commit yourself to the medical profession. To succeed in anything in this world in a substantial way, we have to make commitment. For marriages to work, in Kali Yuga, there will be every type of excuse in due course of time to break up and go our own ways. But there's vows before marriage, according to every great religion in the world, so that we really take the commitment seriously. And with those commitments, we really feel, I have to overcome these obstacles with integrity. Yes? So in spiritual life, commitment gives us strength, gives us focus, and also gives us blessings through connection. So for that reason, it's very sacred. But it has to be built on the sincerity and the intention of our hearts.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Actually, I want to know, one statement is, Krishna never enters into my free will. One statement. The second statement is, what will happen, what Krishna wants. Then these two statements are contradictory, or how, if they are not, then how they are going parallel.
What will happen when Krishna wants?
Yeah, matlab, what is happening is what Krishna wants.
Hari Hari. Krishna is always willing. We have our free will. Whether we want to be parallel with Krishna's, whether we want to be separate from or in union with Krishna's will. That is the independent free will that we are given. Because for love to have depth and satisfaction, it must be a choice that's based on free will. Krishna doesn't create us as computerized program machines to love. Krishna is a supreme person, and he has created us as persons with the free will to love. And where there's love, there's choice to do so many other things also. I'll give an example. When I was young, I had a person who was a friend of mine. And in the neighborhood I grew up in, it was mostly homes of people who really struggled to be in the middle class. There was a few families that were very wealthy, but most people were relatively comfortable, but quite simple
and hardworking. But in the neighborhood, there was one family that was the wealthiest of all families. And anyways, I left that neighborhood and I hitchhiked to India and I became a swami. But this one person who I was associated with, who was very wealthy, he was 1 year older than me, and his younger brother was 1 year younger than me. And I think it was in the late 70s or early 80s, the father died. And he had millions of dollars. And he gave to his two sons. So the older brother, he took that money and invested it in property. Now, he's obviously not a swami. He bought a big, beautiful land in a western state of the United States. And he bought pedigree horses for riding. And he bought an airplane. Since he had an airplane, he got a license to fly. And he got nice cars. And he invested it. And the property values were going up and up and up. Then he got married and had several children. So that's what he did with his father's money. The younger brother, same amount of money, he had some bad association. He met some people who convinced him to be greedy. You have this much money, but you can invest it, and within a month, get 10 times more. And they convinced him to invest it in smuggling of cocaine, a drug, just one time. And your wealth will multiply like anything. So due to that association, he was convinced of it. Instead of being content with what he had, he wanted to make it big, 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 very quickly. He was arrested and put in prison. To this day, he's in prison. Sitting in a prison cell, it's already been about 35 years. His older brother has done everything, spending fortunes to try to get him out, but he can't. So the father gave the same amount of money to both. One used their free will to invest it in a positive, legal, nice way. And he raised the family and he's enjoying like anything. And the other person, due to association, used the same money to try to feed his greed. And he has no access to any of his money. He's just in a little cell. Now, is it his father's fault for giving him the money? What do you say? Huh? Is it his fault or his father's fault? It was his free will. So Krishna tells us in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita. I am the father and the mother of all living beings. By Krishna's grace, he gives us our bodies, he gives us our minds, he gives us knowledge, he gives us, if we want, ignorance.
He gives us, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. He comes to this world again and again and again to tell us how to use what he's given us. But he gives us the free will. And some people use it properly and they're happy and they go back home, back to Godhead. And other people, they get deeper entrenched in the prison cell of material suffering. So yes, Krishna gives us everything to recognize that and to use it in harmony with the will of the proprietor, Krishna. The Gita tells, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichchati. That real peace can be attained when we simply recognize Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Ultimately, everything is for the pleasure and enjoyment of Krishna, and that Krishna is our best well-wishing friend and benefactor. And when we make our choices according to that principle, then we'll be liberated from karma and suffering forever. In one sense, yes, everything is under the control of Krishna, because we can have no free will if Krishna doesn't give it to us. But to facilitate love perfectly, he has given us free will. Just like that father gave the money to his sons. Or another question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. While doing our duties or job, what should be our intention towards truth of life?
Sam Siddhir Haditov. The Srimad Bhagavat tells us atha pumbir that whatever our occupational duty may be in this world, whatever our varna or ashram, its success is when we please Krishna. The intention to please Krishna and the education to understand what really does please Krishna, and the empowerment coming from the association of devotees in our own sadhana, so we can actually live according to the integrity of our deal, our ideals, even in the face of temptation and fear. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj, for giving such enlightening answers to all the queries. We will have the last kirtan now. And once again, to remind you, the next prerna will be on December the 10th and Saturday. So let us, and in conclusion, once again thank His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj for His wonderful presentation by loudly chanting. Thank you all very much. Now you can get ready for the last kirtan. Hare Krishna.